Hello and welcome to the Face of Pro-Life. Today I'm joined by Susan Boyce, and we're going to be talking about the evolution of healthcare reform. And it's a hot topic. You're hearing it all over the place. There are people that are well informed about healthcare reform, and then there's many people who are just getting their news from CNN.
Well, the last time I was on, we were talking about H.R. 3200, and that was the bill this summer that got everybody all upset and that initiated a lot of protests at town hall meetings. But since then, that bill has been superseded by H.R. 3962, which is Nancy Pelosi's bill, mm-hmm. that passed the House. And then currently it got changed, and they change it every time.
Right.
And I guess the current bill is 3590, and that's Harry Reid's bill in the Senate.
Okay. So there's the House bill, mm-hmm. which passed.
Right.
And then there's the Senate bill that they're just now debating.
Right.
That they just voted to debate.
That's correct. And the big news about the latest House bill is that the STUPAC amendment, which prevented federal funding for abortion, has been struck from the bill. So now, as the bill stands, there will be federal funding from abortion. And we'll get into that later. Mm-hmm. But I just like to quickly recapitulate here a synopsis of why the entire bill is so toxic.
Right.
And
the STUPAC bill, the STUPAC amendment does nothing to really
make
the bill any better.
I mean,
it's one step.
it's a very small step. Actually, the whole bill is not about health care at all, but rather it's about a communist takeover of our government. It's about expansion of government into every aspect of our lives. Mm-hmm. It has nothing to do with health care. And some statistics. Quickly, this is from Fox News. The bill is going to create 70 new government agencies with thousands.
How is that possible?
Well, with
70.
It gets worse. With thousands of new bureaucrats, there are 1,597 different instances where the Health and Human Services Secretary, which is Kathleen Sebelius, will be authorized to mandated to write rules and regulations for health care after the legislation passes. So that basically gives an unelected official carte blanche power to decide
policies.
And she's untouchable by the voting populace because she's an appointed official by the president.
And nobody's going to really be able to look it over,
right.
vote on it, or make any kind
right.
of suggestions.
But very quickly, some of the And I haven't seen a line-by-line analysis of H.R. 3590. It's over 2,000 pages long. H.R. 3200 was 1,000 pages long, just over 1,000. So they added 1,000 pages. So I can tell you from what I've read.
And we didn't like the first one.
No. You can bet that they didn't take any of that out. I think it's pretty safe to
say
that.
They just keep it on.
Right. But some of the atrocities that we noted in H.R. 3200 were real-time access to people's bank accounts. So that means they could come in and take money whenever they wanted to. And they need that actual real-time access to be able to fund the insurance, because if there's a public option, it's going to be punishable by fines or imprisonment to not carry health insurance. So in order to have that kind of authority, they're going to need to have real-time access to our bank accounts.
Right. And this isn't just, you know, think about it. I mean, this isn't just, you know, sick people have to have health insurance.
No.
Well people.
Right.
Who currently, like college students
right.
and young adults
yes.
who opt out of health insurance
right.
right now will not have that option.
I've heard that it will cost them $6,000 a year minimum.
Wow.
Yep.
That's more than what it would cost to get private insurance now.
Right, yep. So, I mean, some of the other things real quickly. A national ID card is going to be
necessary.
Issued.
Mm-hmm.
So why do we need a national ID card? We have driver's licenses. We have Social Security cards. Why do we need a national ID card?
It was be tied to your health
information. The purpose of it is to track information and to control an expansion of government to take away our freedoms. And the other
thing, they're gonna purse it as Well, we need this because if you're in an accident in Missouri,
right.
We need to have all of your health records. And don't
yes.
you want your doctors to have that access to all that information? And it's
yeah.
going to sound good, but
sound
the devil's good at making evil sound good.
And then some of the other things are that there's rationing. And anybody who has ever been in healthcare understands that rationing is what leads to pro-death legislation, such as euthanasia and abortion. Because if you ration healthcare, you know, all of a sudden it becomes too expensive to care for people. And just real briefly, Zeke Emanuel, who is the president's chief healthcare policy advisor and also Rahm Emanuel's brother, was the one who advocated rationing. And we talked about that a little last time, mm-hmm. how he was quoted in The Lancet talking about his complete live system and how, you know, we need to only provide basically in a nutshell care for premium care for people 15 to 40 and everybody else was just, you know.
That's so communist.
Yeah.
You know, like
it, well,
only
it
people
is.
Who
That's,
only producers.
Right.
We only need to, you know, keep the producers.
So I think it's pretty safe to say that since they've added 1,000 pages, that all of that is still almost certainly in the bill.
Plus worse,
right. Now, about this bill itself, there are a few other things. One was it was going to prevent the expansion of hospitals, new hospitals, and there was going to be...
And how are you going to service more people, because mm-hmm. obviously more people are going to have access to health care with the same amount of space, if not less space?
Yeah, it kind of boggles the mind that they feel that they have to control that.
It's and not hospitals that, are private enterprises right now.
It's not that you necessarily want to say, okay, yeah, go build hospitals.
Right.
But the fact that the government needs to control that and say, no, there's not going to be any more new hospitals, everybody should be very troubled by that.
Very.
You know, I think that that's a decision that's not for the government to be making. And it should be made based on need.
Yeah. And again, hospitals are private enterprises. They're not.
But they're going to control that, too. And another thing that was very troubling in the H.R. 3200, which, again, has been superseded, was the fact that they were going to be involved in marriage counseling. They mandated that, yeah. And also that there was going to be mandatory visitation to new parents that had new, you know, babies.
In their homes.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was some of the troubling aspects.
A little intrusive, I would say.
That was why, these are just this is just a really brief look at why this is not about healthcare, but about expanding government and taking away our freedoms.
Right. And there's so many things that can be helped. I mean, we do need some reform in healthcare.
Oh, absolutely.
But only baby steps. We only need little small... Why are we doing some of the things that they're calling for?
We'll get into that later. I just kind of hope to just hit a few more key facts here to inform people. Now, Senator Reid is out there telling us that the cost of this, a 10-year cost, is $848 billion. But that's not true. Actually, the cost is $2.5 trillion over 10 years. And the reason he's able to use that number is actually a smoke and mirrors trick, because the way the legislation is set up, we're going to be taxed immediately, but they're not going to start paying out for 3 years.
Yeah, I heard that.
Yes. So they're taking, Harry Reid is taking the 10-year time frame, which includes the 3 years without paying out. If you were to take the 10-year time frame, where we're taxed and we're paying out, it's $2.5 trillion,
wow.
Not $898 billion.
Wow.
So that's something, they're not being honest about the total cost, first of all. And Ramison reports that only 38% of Americans support this legislation. So the bill does not have a lot of popularity, and it's losing more popularity the more people find out.
And the more informed people become.
This is a very interesting fact about the cost per family. Under government-controlled health care, cost for mandatory insurance, mandatory because that's what it's going to be. It's going to be mandatory under pain of fines or imprisonment. is expected to be $15,000, with premiums declined by $1,700. The threshold increase in deductible is from 7.5 to 10%.
Wow.
And they said by year five of the government-run health care plan, families with an average income of $75,000 will pay a 40% tax on health insurance premiums.
Wow. So even if you have a health insurance now, you think you're not going to be affected?
You will be affected.
You will be totally affected.
Because employers are not going to be able to afford this.
Right.
So the tax will be passed on by lower wages and loss of jobs.
Right.
This is an interesting thing about abortion coverage. Now, this is what has, we're going to talk a lot more about this. The abortion coverage, the Stupak Amendment prohibited federal funding of abortion, but I think it did very little to protect the conscience rights of healthcare workers,
right, or not enough.
But it's really interesting to note that in Harry Reid's version, which is H.R. 3590.
Which they're currently debating.
Currently, right now, I'm going to read a quote here. It says, this is from the GOP leader website. It says, beginning on line 7, page 118, section 1330, under voluntary choice of coverage of abortion services, the Health and Human Services Secretary is given the authority to determine when abortion is allowed under the government-run health plan. What is even more alarming is that a monthly abortion premium will be charged of all enrollees in the government-run health plan.
Why? Why single out abortion?
It is right there, beginning on line 11, page 122, section 1330, under actuarial value of optional service coverage. The premium will be paid into a U.S. Treasury account, and these federal funds will be used to pay for abortion services.
So what they're saying is that you, the taxpayers, aren't paying for this. That the person who has their health insurance through the government has this money set aside, mm-hmm. and this is mandatory, so that even people who don't, who will never have an abortion,
right,
all including men,
right, absolutely,
have set their funds up to pay for abortion.
Yes. And so, I mean...
And I thought it was a woman's right to choose, not the Secretary of Health to sit down and figure out when it's necessary.
When we buy this bill, we're going to buy government control of every aspect of our lives. We're going to see an erosion of the freedoms that, like, we've never seen before. And I, quite frankly, I think a lot of people are going to be shocked. They're not going to know what hit them, and it's going to be way too late at that point for us to take it back. I mean,
right.
I imagine we could still we'll still try, but have you ever seen any government-run program be repealed?
No.
Look at Medicare. Look at
even bad programs.
Right. And this chart kind of goes over a stare and compare of the similarities that I kind of have already touched upon.
But all of the egregious things are a thread throughout all of the versions of the bill.
Right.
Pretty much the death panels, the...
I don't know. I think it's probably not so much that there are death panels per se, but that they're going to force people into evaluating what care is appropriate with financial incentives attached.
Right.
So in other words, they don't want to call that a death panel, but when there's a lot of pressure and there's fines for doctors for non-compliance, for not holding these conferences, and you're told what services you can and can't provide, I mean, pretty much that's what's going to be happening.
Right.
That's going to be the end result.
And people are going to feel helpless.
There's not going to be any recourse because it's set up in the bill. If you look at the legal language, it's not touchable. All these panels are removed from voting regulation. It's mm-hmm. under the authority of the Health and Human Services Secretary. So she's given broad sweeping powers to affect our lives individually. And for that, we have no say.
Right.
We have no recourse. We have no say. And this is an interesting article that talks about the effect on income. And this is, I think this was the, hold on, let me find the, well, I might not be able to find the NPR one, but there was an interesting article by NPR that I would really like to be able to find. And
that was one of the earlier ones.
Maybe it's over
here.
Okay. But even NPR, which is everybody knows is a very liberal source, was talking about, they're worried about the cost of the affordability of families. I can't find it. You know, for health care. And they're saying that it's not going to be affordable for families.
And it's going to be mandatory.
And it's going to be mandatory. And these are the liberal people that are liking the overall health care.
Right, right, right. And, you know, I mean, talk about politicians being out of touch. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, what they need to do is overhaul the health care system in a way that people can afford it, not take it over.
Not take it
so
over.
So that it's but this, totally unaffordable.
This, they what they need to do is a sensible step-by-step fix instead of this is like the atom bomb fix, you
right.
know, the nuclear option.
You know, I always come back to this, but when I first moved to Connecticut, they had just passed the Husky plan, which made all the children had health insurance. Well, that's fine. That's great. Every kid should have access to health care, except they did absolutely nothing to encourage doctors to practice in the state. We never,
right.
we lived in Connecticut for 12 years, and I never had a doctor in the state of Connecticut.
Right.
My children never had a pediatrician because there were no pediatricians taking patients.
Right.
So even though
right.
we
that,
had
that subscribed to the Husky plan.
No,
or
we,
that would accept
we didn't
it.
Even have Husky.
Oh, okay.
We had regular health insurance, but you couldn't find a physician in the state.
Oh, wow.
Whether you had Husky or,
right.
or any premium
yeah,
health
right.
care plan. It's there was there's and I've seen this bill. There's really no incentive to increase the number of doctors.
Well, they're going to force them to comply, just like they're going to force us to comply. And I'm not exactly sure, but if you read through the language, there are provisions to force compliance. You know, basically, it comes down to money incentives and fines. You know,
right.
and a combination of both. So they'll use that tool to you know.
What, so doctors have to see 10 times the patient so you get that much less care from them?
I don't really, it would be unfair for me to, you know,
right.
because I honestly don't know what the particulars are, but from the brief amount that I read, there was a lot of, you know, a lot of coercion, basically. I mean,
mm-hmm.
that's what you can say. Nobody's going to like that mm-hmm. word, but on the medical community itself and telling them how to practice.
But instead of doing that, shouldn't they be doing things to encourage people to go into the field of medicine? Really, there's no incentive nowadays to go. It used to be, it was a very lucrative field mm-hmm. to be in.
This is interesting. They said that under this plan, 5 million Americans will lose their employer coverage because of taxes.
And Obama keeps saying that if you like your health insurance, you'll be able to keep it. Obviously not.
It says under the Senate bill, U.S. taxes will increase by $493.6 billion, almost $500 billion. It says, although he shrewdly renamed the public option, Senator Reid did stand by his promise to include it. His community health insurance option would allow states to opt out of participating in government-run health care, but they would still be expected to pay for portions of it.
Oh, that's nice. So you
so
don't get the benefits, but you
right.
have to pay for the
right.
service.
And it says that Senator Reid's bill would impose $28 billion in new taxes on employers that don't provide government-approved health plans. The new taxes would ultimately be passed on to American workers in the form of reduced wages or lost jobs.
Wow. Well, and not just lost jobs, but lost businesses. Because,
right.
you know,
businesses are not going to, small businesses are not going to be able to afford this.
I know. Small businesses often don't give their employees health care because they just simply can't afford it.
Right.
Now, instead of making it affordable for them to, you know, buy into a system that, you know, allow their employees to get health care, they're just going to basically run them out of business.
Right. Well, I'd like to move on now to, now that we kind of did a really brief summary of why this whole health care reform is bad and why it needs to be scrapped and why we need to start over, with, you know, why we need to lose the nuclear option of this whole health care reform as being, you know, proposed by the Democrats.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about that, but I'd like to talk about the Catholic response and, in general, the United States Catholic Conference of Bishops' response. Now, they are rightly outraged by the removal of the Stupak Amendment.
Right.
But if you go to their website and you read what they have written, they address the fact that federal funding of abortion is unacceptable, but they don't talk about really any of the other toxic aspects of the bill. So basically they are saying that there needs not to be federal funding of abortion, there needs to be conscience protection, there needs to be more insurance for immigrants. But if they could just get that,
they'd be happy with
the bill. They'd be very happy with the bill.
And support it.
They would be very happy and they would support it. Now, this is what Raymond Arroyo had to say about that. He said that, I'm going to sum it up a little bit and then I'm going to read some pertinent quotes. He basically said that they did a great job getting the Stupak Amendment in there.
Right.
That was fantastic.
They're very instrumental in that.
He said, what this demonstrates is the power of the Bishops' Conference when it sets its mind to do something. Unfortunately, they set the bar too low. They should have pushed for the full Catholic agenda on this bill. The Democratic leadership now knows how to roll the conference and how to pacify it. The bishops' other demands, conscience clauses for medical workers, coverage for immigrants, have been virtually ignored. And although nearly 50 bishops raised the issue of subsidiarity, a core tenet of the church's social doctrine, which teaches that decisions are best made at the lowest level, the bishops' conference, the conference, made no mention of this in any of its letters or public statements. Now, individual bishops have, and we'll get to that a little later. There was also no mention of rationing mechanisms in the bill that will very likely hit the frail elderly as well as the poor. Very likely. He's saying it nicely. It's absolutely going to be the leading cause of more abortions and more euthanasia across the board. The zeal of the staff to get a universal health care bill passed, any universal health care bill, overwhelmed even the cries of the bishops themselves. So the staff drove but one stake in the ground on Capitol Hill, the abortion stake.
Yeah.
And so he then goes on to say that the Stupak Amendment is going to be short-lived because they're going to scrub it. And I think at this point it's important to note that they already did scrub it. But even if they could get another sponsor, and right now
they are looking for
another sponsor. And even if they get that sponsor, it's not going to matter. There's still going to be federally funded abortion mandates for abortion funding because of two things. One, if there were an amendment that prohibited abortion funding, NARAL and Planned Parenthood have plans to file a federal lawsuit to stop it.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. And
take it to the courts and the courts will override it.
Right. And the other thing, the second reason why it's unlikely to succeed, that there won't, that, you know, that we could pull federal funding, mandated funding for abortion out of the bill, is because the Health and Human Services Secretary has the ability to make rules and regulations after the legislation is passed.
Yeah, you said that.
So based on those two things, it's pretty likely that there is going to be federal funding from abortion. And President Obama, who supports that, and the Democratic leadership, who supports that, know this.
Yeah.
That's why they weren't that very upset.
Oh, I know. Oh, well, Rosa DeLauro was crying when the Stupak Amendment was discussed and passed. I mean,
I think that's pretty much theatrical.
I mean, how could you be, I mean, that's just saying, you have to pay for abortion. How could we live without abortion?
Yeah.
I mean, what's the matter with these people? It's so important to them that everybody accept and pay for the abortion.
They're going to get their way because there's several layers of insurance built into the legislation to make sure that it happens. And there's several interesting articles that I've read about this, and this is actually pretty interesting right here, and if I'd like to read it if I can. It talks about how the Roman Catholic bishops have yet to find a senator willing to sponsor their amendment for a tougher ban on the use of taxpayer money for abortion in the Senate health care reform bill.
So they got the Stupak amendment through this House, but they want something similar in the Senate.
And they're looking to Bob Casey, who's a Democratic senator out of Pennsylvania.
Whose father was adamantly pro-life.
Okay. Well, I'm not too familiar with the senator or his background, but I've heard that he's probably not the strongest pro-life
advocate. He presented himself in the election as a pro-life.
Okay. Well, that's who they're looking to. And it says, church leaders are urging defeat of the reform measure if the abortion insurance provision isn't changed. But even if they get what they want, the bishops are unlikely to officially endorse the final package, something that could make lawmakers more accommodating. According to John Carr, head of the conference's Justice, Peace, and Human Development Office, the bishops typically do not endorse large reform legislation because of their complexity. We rarely endorse 2,000-page bills, he said. Well, that makes sense. You would hope that. But then they go on to say, but Carr said, the bishops are holding out one prize, an open letter from the conference to the Senate saying, quote unquote, very favorable things about the changes in the legislation, and that, quote, makes the case that passage of national health care reform is an urgent national priority. Now, this goes back to what Raymond Arroyo was saying, that universal health care, any universal health care, without regards to those nasty little particulars like rationing of health care and, you know, government access to our bank accounts and national ID cards and excessive taxation. You know, we won't worry about that. It's
small little detail.
It's universal.
The devil's in the details.
It's universal health care, you know. And
like you said, it kind of goes back to one of the tenets of the church, and that is, you know, we need to support ourselves and each other. And having the government step in to do something as private as private as healthcare is really, it's really running a big gamut of running this slippery slope. So unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today.
Well, we'll talk
about
it more.
But you're gonna be back.
Yes.
Thank you for joining us, and thank you for joining us. We hope that you've learned something. We hope you can find the time to write or call your representatives and senators and tell them no on any health care reform that is 2,000 pages long. Take it one little step at a time so that we can vet the process and understand what's going on. And we want you to look in the mirror the next time and realize yours too is the face of pro-life. Join us again next time.